Chapter 5. This is your warning. Most of them are completely random, you know. Yoo Jung-hyuk. Hey, you did it. It's over. Well done, YJ8. Shut up. Their Kakao Talk log soon filled with conversations like these. Kim Dokcha sending different variations of heads up, and Yoo Jung-hyuk rarely answering with anything more than mental grumbling, before he found a way to close the fulguration. Bond is open. What are you baking? And can I have some? Fine, be that way. The fulguration's frequency initially seemed to floor Yoo Jung-hyuk. You're up. Yes, again. You're the one who wanted me to warn you every time, you know. Don't blame me if it's annoying. But instead of Yoo Jung-hyuk finally understanding how ridiculous his request was, all those warnings did was entrench him in his position. He started getting faster and faster at closing the fulgurations. He got competitive about it. His phone would notify him of a message, and he would begin working on bond control before he had even checked the sender. Soon, he gave Kim Dokcha's contact profile its own notification tone. It would have been flattering if it hadn't meant that Yoo Jung-hyuk got an instant spike of anxiety and frustration every time it rang. Heads up. Wow, okay, that was fast. But as efficient as Yoo Jung-hyuk was getting, the fulguration still tripped him up during games. He was no longer putting his phone on silent while the team was training, which was the stupidest decision Kim Dokcha had ever seen him make. The World Championship was fast approaching, and Lee Hyun-sung, Kim Nam-moon, and Yoo Ji-hae had all noticed their leader's occasional drop in concentration. Kim Dokcha caught them whispering together in the break room one day. Maybe we should just steal his phone. Kim Nam-moon, there's got to be a better way to go about this, Lee Hyun-sung said.
Should we tell President Nim?
Lee Ji-hae suggested. Tattling to the teacher? Lame. They couldn't seem to make up their minds about what to do. Yoo Jung-hyuk had the habit of walling them out when they tried to ask personal questions, and this time was no exception. Are you even still reading what I type in here? You didn't even open the message. I could just send you paragraphs of the novel I'm reading and you wouldn't care, huh? Whether or not the team ended up talking to Namgun Minyoung, inevitably there came a day when Kim Dokcha received a fulguration while she was in the training room coaching the four of them. He didn't send a warning. Did he look like he had a death wish? If Yoo Jung-hyuk's phone rang now, the first thing she would do after trashing her disciple for not muting it would be to check the screen to see who had dared distract him during work. So, for the first time in weeks, the fulguration ran its full course. Coincidentally, that night Kim Dokcha slept better than he had in a month. Yoo Jung-hyuk stared into the mini eyes of the three-headed manticore dragon, his heart pounding. Blood ran down his cheek from a cut at his hairline. His heavy arms raised the black angelic devil sword once more. You've been in a rotten mood lately, Han Si-young told him. What, just because I said last week that that plot twist of yours was stupid? She glared at him. He looked away, feeling a minuscule pang of regret. Yeah, maybe I was exaggerating. I guess you can still do something with it. Why, thank you so much. Have you decided to stop being a gratuitous asshole then? Well, you know, life is meaningless and we're just here to enjoy the ride. I changed my mind, she groaned. You should never have met soulmate guy. He couldn't help but agree. A sunfish, also called a mola, is any fish in the genus Mola, family Molidae. The fish developed their truncated bullet-like shape because the back fin, which is present at birth, never grows. Instead, it folds into itself as the creature matures, creating a rounded rudder called a clavis.
Stop sending me crap.
So you do remember how to read. I was starting to wonder.
Is it a fulguration or not?
You have already closed it.
Just send a clear warning next time.
Why? You don't read them.
You do realize that if I need to contact you for work, this is going to become a problem?
Stop sending me stupid stuff, and I'll read them.
Fine. He looked at his phone a bit longer, but of course Yoo Jin-hyuk didn't send anything else. His jaw clenched. He should never have made contact with Yoo Jin-hyuk. Nothing had been wrong with the way things used to be. Why had he tried to fix what wasn't broken? Yoo Jin-hyuk was feeling lonely, clearly. It wasn't up to Kim Dok-ja to remedy it. He slammed his phone down. Yoo Jin-hyuk was helping Mia with her homework. Kim Dok-ja wasn't having a good day. It was a Sunday. None of his favorite web novels had updated, and he couldn't find anything good to keep his mind busy. So he watched Yoo Jin-hyuk help his sister with her homework. Eventually, though, he had to cave and open KakaoTalk. He didn't want Mia to fail math.
That's not how you resolve those.
That familiar, hateful trill rang in Yoo Jin-hyuk's pocket, causing Kim Dok-ja and Yoo Jin-hyuk to tense. They both had developed full Pavlovian reflexes to the sound. Yesterday in the subway, Kim Dok-ja heard a stranger's phone ring with the same tone and had instantly felt the urge to punch Yoo Jin-hyuk. Mia looked up at the sound.
"Is that him?"
she said, with an eagerness that surprised Kim Dok-ja.
"Sonmei oppa."
So Yoo Jin-hyuk had told her about him. Yoo Jin-hyuk grunted assent as he took a cursory look at his phone. He frowned at the content of the message.
How would that guy know?
Was his immediate defensive reaction. It was followed by a suspicious,
"How long have you been watching?"
Kim Dok-ja's stomach twisted. Weeks of playing according to his rules, and the jerk was still wary.
I'll have you know I babysit two kids in my neighborhood.
Yoo Jin-hyuk pointedly typed.
It works this way.
Sure, but that's not how it's taught to them in school.
You're going to confuse her. Check her textbook.
Scowling, Yoo Jin-hyuk hauled a second chair to Mia's side of the table and sat down to do just that. Mia took his abandoned phone without qualms. Another parent might have scolded her, but Yoo Jin-hyuk spoiled his sister.
Kim Dok-ja, she read with delight. Weird name.
A message appeared under her eyes.
We can't all have a cool name like your brother.
Mia made a pleased noise. Yoo Jin-hyuk looked up with a frown.
Kim Dok-ja, don't do anything unnecessary, he warned.
Unnecessary? What was unnecessary here?
Mia,
Yoo Jin-hyuk said out loud when she tried to type something back. She pouted but put it down.
When are you going to bring him home? She said. I want to meet him.
She did? Well, she probably pictured her brother's soulmate as someone way cooler than Kim Dok-ja. Still, he was a bit flattered. But Yoo Jin-hyuk's mind bristled protectively at the idea. Kim Dok-ja recoiled. That bastard? Really? What had he ever done to make him think that he could be a threat to her? Kim Dok-ja's fingers dug into the cushion by his side.
I'll be back, Yoo Jin-hyuk told Mia.
He took his phone to head into the corridor. His mind felt like a storm cloud.
How long have you been watching?
He asked again.
Hey, you're the one who still hasn't closed it.
Kim Dok-ja, are you really telling me about all the fulgurations? You've been setting less warnings lately.
His heart fell to his feet. It was true. Ever since that time with Namgun Minyong, he had been skipping some of the warnings, when they would have distracted Yoo Jung-hyuk at work mostly, but sometimes at other moments too, because Yoo Jung-hyuk would get suspicious if he received a lot more messages when he was at home than when he was at training, right? That was just logical. And it was for the man's own good, really. I'm getting less of them. You're working on your bond control regularly now, right? It's not surprising. He was fudging the truth, but it wasn't a lie. On top of the fulgurations getting shorter, he really was receiving fewer of them. His nail punctured the battered cushion case. Yoo Jung-hyuk's mind radiated suspicion. Fine, he replied, and finally worked on closing the fulguration. But just as his presence in Kim Dokja's head faded, a stray thought filtered through. How can I trust that guy? Kim Dokja found that he had difficulty breathing suddenly. He extracted his finger from the cushion foam. He brushed impatiently at his cheeks. You used to trust me, he muttered, angry and bitter. What was wrong with trusting him? Yoo Jung-hyuk had done it so easily before. After that first disastrous stream, it took a while for Yoo Jung-hyuk to try again. He was busy enough with his career. By coincidence, the day he finally came back to Starstream, he did so just after a fulguration. Kim Dokja logged in. One wouldn't have known it from looking at his face on the screen, but Yoo Jung-hyuk was in a good mood. So Kim Dokja reached for his keyboard and dared another overture.
A. Reader.
Good evening, O Supreme King.
Yoo Jung-hyuk frowned. You're back.
A. Reader.
Yep, back for another jolly good time of boring farm quests and complete silence.
A. Reader.
I wish I could say that at least the view was nice, but frankly, it's not all that.
A. Reader.
Would you at least buy a better webcam? You have a face like that and you hide it behind a pixelated nightmare? Don't you have any shred of business sense?
Lokapala Surya.
Lol, we're better off not seeing his ugly mug.
Huh? Who was that? Come to think of it, the viewer count was a bit higher today. Well, Yoo Jung-hyuk had just won an important match, after all. A few more wayward souls must have given in to curiosity. Kim Dokja should probably let it go. Any audience had to be progress at this point. He did not let it go.
A. Reader.
His ugly mug? Seriously.
Lokapala Surya.
What, you a girl?
Lokapala Surya.
Are you one of the bints who yells their lungs out every time he opens his mouth?
Lokapala Surya.
He could be a good gamer if he made an effort. But I swear his only fans are women.
A. Reader.
Wow.
A. Reader.
No, I'm not a woman. I am not half as insecure as whatever you've got going on either.
Lokapala Surya.
What?
A. Reader.
My friend, you clicked on his Starstream channel. You know he's a good gamer. You know that because he's a literal world champion. But your breathtaking take is that he would be better if, let me see if I understand your argument correctly, women stopped paying attention to him.
0x0 Swamp Predator 0x0.
Hey man, no need to bite its head off.
0x0 Swamp Predator 0x0.
He was just agreeing with you that we don't need to see that guy's face.
A. Reader.
Nothing makes me lose faith in humanity faster than the internet's lack of reading comprehension.
A soft snorting sound drew his attention away from the train wreck of a conversation.
A. Reader.
Oh, hey. Yoo Jung-hyuk, are you going for the Absolute Throne quest line? Good choice.
Yoo Jung-hyuk gave no answer but a twitch of his eyes. Yet over the next few streams, Supreme King started doing more interesting quests and dungeons. Yoo Jung-hyuk still wouldn't talk, unless provoked, but he wasn't very good at pretending to ignore the chat. The day he got a better webcam, Kim Dokja was so moved he launched an immediate campaign to convince him to stop skipping the NPC dialogues and lore exposition. Yoo Jung-hyuk repeatedly hissed at him to shut up, but by some happy accident,
He always seemed to be taking a drink of water whenever a cutscene was starting. Would you look at that?
A reader.
I am so proud of you. I feel like a mother watching her chick leave the nest.
Be quiet, Yoo Jin-hyuk growled.
No matter how much Kim Dokja prodded at him, though, it was too much to expect him to make small talk on camera. He never even bothered explaining the puzzles, and Kim Dokja got into the habit of figuring them out himself and giving his reasoning in the chat. He thought that if anyone was watching these streams for the actual game, that should be the bare minimum they'd want. The number of viewers grew. Some thanked Kim Dokja, some tried in vain to interact with Yoo Jin-hyuk, who seemed to pay less attention to the chat, the more messages it contained. Some trolled. Yoo Jin-hyuk had as many detractors as he had fans, and Lokapala Surya was a pretty meek example of them. The ones that came later were far more virulent, and when they woke up and chose violence, Kim Dokja had his hands full stopping them from turning the chat into a dumpster fire. On one such occasion, Supreme King stopped moving. One could hear Yoo Jin-hyuk click around, but nothing was happening on screen, and as usual, he didn't bother enlightening his audience. Kim Dokja, who was in the middle of a particularly vicious argument, didn't pay him any mind. Until a Starstream notification informed him that he had just gained moderation rights.
Crown emoji, a reader.
Oh.
Crown emoji, a reader.
Oh, I rise.
Yoo Jin-hyuk glared at his camera. It seemed like he was looking straight at him through the screen. And for a second, Kim Dokja felt something. Something strange and invasive and vertigo-inducing. Kim Dokja broke the pseudo-eye contact.
I can take it away, Yoo Jin-hyuk warned.
Kim Dokja typed an answer with one hand as he banned all lowlifes with the other.
Crown emoji, a reader.
Don't be like that, Yoo Jin-hyuk.
Crown emoji, a reader.
We're companions through life and death now, you and me.
Yoo Jin-hyuk grunted and turned away. Kyrgios caught him texting under the table during a group meeting.
Not so understaffed that we can't afford to let you go if you keep up that deplorable attitude, do you hear me?
Yes, Director Neem, Kim Dokja dutifully replied.
The scowling had been lasting for long enough that his back was starting to hurt from bowing. At least everyone else had been dismissed.
No, you don't, Kyrgios scoffed. I know your type.
Kim Dokja opened his mouth to answer, but Kyrgios closed the file in front of him with a decisive snap.
Listen, Kim Dokja,
he said, leaning forward with enough intensity that Kim Dokja, surprised, obeyed.
You have potential for this job. Don't let that ill-mannered disciple of Namgun Minyong's influence you into wasting it.
Kim Dokja felt sweat beat under his shirt. This was bad. Kyrgios hadn't seen who he was messaging. He had no reason to bring Yoo Jin-hyuk into this unless the two heads of the company were starting to catch on. Namgun Minyong had to have noticed Yoo Jin-hyuk's unstable results by now. Considering the timing of his arrival, Kim Dokja would naturally be her first suspect. If Kyrgios brought this incident up with her...
I'm not sure what Director Neem means, Kim Dokja said blankly.
Kyrgios wasn't fooled.
I won't bring this up with the president, he said. Yet, solve this issue or you will leave me no choice.
Kim Dokja bowed, thanking Director Neem for his patience. Kyrgios waved him away. Kim Dokja left the meeting room with relief. He closed the door behind himself and turned, only to stop. Yoo Jin-hyuk was standing there. They looked at each other in silence. For once, Kim Dokja didn't feel like making the effort of talking first. Finally, Yoo Jin-hyuk spoke.
Uriel said you were getting dressed down.
Kim Dokja gave him an insincere smile.
And? Were you thinking of taking the blame? How noble.
He wasn't hiding the thorns in his voice. Yoo Jin-hyuk's jaw contracted. The faint sound of footsteps behind the door heralded Kyrgios' approach. Rather than getting caught standing there like a boulder, Kim Dokja made a swin-second decision.
You know what? Yoo Jung-hyuk, you're on your way home, aren't you? He said, taking Yoo Jung-hyuk's coat-clad arm. Won't you come buy me a coffee?
His grip was just this side of too tight, but Yoo Jung-hyuk could easily have shaken him off. Yet he let himself be towed away. Kim Dokja made a quick detour through his office to get his satchel and apologized to Uriel for his behavior during the meeting. She gave him an embarrassed smile, but looked intrigued to find Yoo Jung-hyuk waiting for him at the door. The two of them didn't speak as they headed toward the closest Starbucks. Once there, Kim Dokja shamelessly ordered something much costlier than his usual and let Yoo Jung-hyuk pay, even knowing that the man wouldn't get anything for himself. The shop was just starting to fill with the end-of-day crowd, and Kim Dokja found a small table in the back corner. Yoo Jung-hyuk put his wallet away and sat in front of him without comment.
Look at you being so accommodating, Kim Dokja drawled. Are you actually feeling guilty?
You could have waited for the meeting to be over before messaging me.
Kim Dokja gave a sour snort. Sure, and be accused of withholding information again. But he didn't have a thick enough face to say so aloud when he was guilty as charged in the first place. He had been trying to keep a careful balance of sending just enough warnings not to make Yoo Jung-hyuk suspicious, and he had failed. Yet, hadn't he been set up for failure from the start? Even if he had played exactly by Yoo Jung-hyuk's rules, the simple truth was that Yoo Jung-hyuk would have had to take his word for it. And how could someone so paranoid rely on blind faith? Maybe Yoo Jung-hyuk also knew that. He was watching Kim Dokja like he was one of the most frustrating puzzles he had ever encountered.
Are you getting disciplined? He said.
Not this time.
Silence settled between them. Kim Dokja sipped at his coffee.
You're going to end up disciplined if you keep this up, though, he added.
Yoo Jung-hyuk grunted.
I don't understand how it's not a problem, he said, glaring at the table.
Wasn't Kim Dokja's whole point that it was?
I just said, I send you multiple fulgurations a week.
Yoo Jung-hyuk cut him off.
How is it not a bother?
Kim Dokja blinked at him.
You've made it pretty clear that it's bothering you.
But not you.
I told you it doesn't.
Why?
Kim Dokja sat back in his chair, frowning.
I don't understand what you want from me, Yoo Jung-hyuk.
Isn't it better if they stop entirely?
A flash of cold froze his entire body.
You can't,
he heard himself say, a knee-jerk denial. He couldn't, because that was impossible. As long as both soulmates were alive, there would be fulgurations. But also he couldn't do that to him. Yoo Jung-hyuk leaned his torso over the table. He looked like a predator smelling blood.
Why?
He stressed. Kim Dokja tried to withdraw his hand to his lap, but found one of his forearms held captive under Yoo Jung-hyuk's palm. Yoo Jung-hyuk's eyes on him were dizzying. It felt like he was standing on the edge of that first instant bone-deep connection again. Yet it eluded him. He didn't want to understand why Yoo Jung-hyuk was so insistent about this, and Yoo Jung-hyuk couldn't understand him either, so here they were, two strangers sitting at a table. Some soulmates they were. Kim Dokja couldn't bear it. He had put them in this situation. He had broken the status quo. If he couldn't find a way to reach Yoo Jung-hyuk, Yoo Jung-hyuk would break them entirely.
It's, he said, his lips numb. Yoo Jung-hyuk, it's like spices.
Spices, he said, frowning.
If you use them correctly, they only meld with the taste of the dish, right? You don't really think about each spice you've put in when you're eating. But if you had to stop using them, wouldn't you hate that?
What nonsense was he saying now? Yoo Jung-hyuk's hand slackened on his arm.
The fulgurations are the spices.
Kim Dokcha didn't answer. He was all out of bullshit. Yoo Jung-hyuk scrutinized him.
That's why you won't tell me about them.
I won't tell you about them? I just nearly got fired for telling you about them. Kim Dokcha countered. But his voice came out more bitter than self-righteous.
You're a dishonest guy.
You're the one who wanted me here, Yoo Jung-hyuk. If you've changed your mind, let me buzz off already. Yoo Jung-hyuk glared at him. He stood up with a clatter of his chair and stormed off. Kim Dokcha's hand clenched around his coffee. He raised it to his lips and tasted nothing but ash. Kim Dokcha spent a sleepless night. The next morning, he staggered through his routine and dragged himself to work. He just wanted to avoid Yoo Jung-hyuk, Nam Kun Min-young, and all their ilk, make it through the day and go back home to his bed. The stars were not feeling merciful. He had barely entered the building before his eyes fell on Yoo Jung-hyuk. He and Yi Hyung-sung were sitting in the lobby, both in sportswear. Yoo Jung-hyuk's head was propped against a wall behind him, baring the long column of his throat and the faint shine of sweat on his collarbones. He was wearing a tank top and shorts, and his hair was in disarray. Kim Dokcha's brain blanked for a painfully long moment. Yi Hyung-sung got up and left for the sports room at the back of the ground floor. Kim Dokcha snapped out of it. He speed-walked to the elevator, embarrassed to have been caught by surprise. Yoo Jung-hyuk and Yi Hyung-sung making use of the building's sports room was nothing new. Yoo Jung-hyuk came early twice a week to do just this. The other days, he jogged in the morning before cooking breakfast for Mia and him. He was probably just taking a break before hitting the showers.
Kim Dokcha.
Kim Dokcha froze, hand hovering over the call button. Yoo Jung-hyuk's eyes had opened a slit. His dark eyes gleamed at Kim Dokcha under thick lashes.
What do you want? Kim Dokcha said. I'm late. Whose fault is that?
Yours if you make me any later, he retorted and jabbed the call button.
Kim Dokcha.
Yoo Jung-hyuk barked. He surged to his feet, muscles tensing under his shirt like he was about to drag Kim Dokcha into this conversation kicking and screaming. Kim Dokcha gave an angry huff. He whirled around, crossed the lobby, threw his satchel to the ground, and let himself drop into Yi Hyung-sung's abandoned seat. Yoo Jung-hyuk watched him warily. When all Kim Dokcha did was glare at the opposite wall, he sat back down.
Sorry,
Kim Dokcha ground out, before he managed to convince himself to swallow the word back and never let it see the light of day. Yoo Jung-hyuk threw him a surprised look. Kim Dokcha refused to meet his eyes.
About yesterday, he continued. I know I get a bit possessive,
he said, like it was burning his tongue, about the fulgurations.
And I get that it's not really fair to you. But Yoo Jung-hyuk, this isn't something you can afford to be a control freak about either.
Yoo Jung-hyuk let that float between them. When he gave no reply, Kim Dokcha reluctantly opened his mouth again.
If it was easier before, when you didn't know me, don't leave,
Yoo Jung-hyuk cut in. Kim Dokcha frowned. How come he was still saying that?
Why not? It's not like we're getting much out of me being here.
Yoo Jung-hyuk looked affronted somehow.
Isn't it better than the fulgurations?
What is?
Meeting, like this.
No, that was... What? It was completely different. Being in Yoo Jung-hyuk's head and looking at him from across a bench were two different worlds entirely. For starters, Kim Dokcha had no idea what he was thinking when he spouted such outlandish things.
We barely see each other all day, he said, rather than figure out how to even begin to explain that.
You don't even answer my texts.
Let's meet, Yoo Jung-hyuk said, for coffee, every week.
Kim Dokcha goggled at him. Did you hit your head this morning, Yoo Jung-hyuk? Meet. And talk about what? We couldn't last 5 minutes yesterday without arguing. Yoo Jung-hyuk's jaw tensed. His eyes roved around the lobby. Seeing him so obviously struggling with words, Kim Dokcha found himself relenting. Wasn't Yoo Jung-hyuk finally trying to reach out in his own awkward way? Kim Dokcha sighed. Fine, he said. We can try it, I guess. He foresaw a lot of forced, clumsy conversations in his near future, but his concession made Yoo Jin-hyuk relax. With so much of his body in plain sight in his shorts and t-shirt, it was a showy affair, muscles unclenching all over his arms and legs. Even the line of the crook of his neck softened with the trapezius going lax. You can drop the warnings during work hours, he said.
Oh,
Kim Dokcha said, astonished.
Okay.
Now they were making progress. Yoo Jin-hyuk gave him a dark look.
But keep warning me about the others. All the others.
Kim Dokcha found himself in a good enough mood that he didn't even take offense. I wasn't lying, you know, he said. There really are fewer of them now. But he smiled at Yoo Jin-hyuk. As long as he had some fulgurations to himself, he could follow the rules. Yoo Jin-hyuk seemed to take his behavior for the mute agreement it was. He examined him thoughtfully.
They really don't distract you.
This, again, Kim Dokcha rolled his eyes. The guy really took him for a weakling. I once went through a major exam with you cursing about paperwork in my head the whole time. Yoo Jin-hyuk quirked a brow.
And you passed it.
Well, no, Kim Dokcha admitted. But that's because I had been up all night reading a novel. Yoo Jin-hyuk laughed. It was just a huff of dry laughter, but the curl of his lips hit Kim Dokcha right in the chest.
Oh, Dokcha-si, good morning,
Lee Hyun-sung said, re-emerging bright-eyed and damp-haired into the lobby. Morning, Kim Dokcha said. For some reason, he felt like he had been caught doing something he shouldn't. He hurried to get up and join Lee Hyun-sung by the elevator. When he sneaked a glance over his shoulder, Yoo Jin-hyuk was headed for the showers, but he was still watching Kim Dokcha. Their eyes met. They held until Yoo Jin-hyuk disappeared from sight. Chapter 6. The knock sounded on Kim Dokcha's door as he was shoving a pair of socks into his suitcase. Damn, trust that guy to be right on time. He crossed the room, hastily closing enough of his shirt's buttons that his neighbors wouldn't accuse him of exhibitionism. He opened the door. Yoo Jin-hyuk's tall and dark silhouette stood out against the dawn. Seeing the sky only just lightening made Kim Dokcha want to dive back into bed. Yoo Jin-hyuk looked him up and down. His frown expressed his displeasure at what he was seeing. Kim Dokcha managed to dig up a polite smile. Sorry, I seem to be running a bit late. Do you mind waiting for a... Yoo Jin-hyuk shoved past him into the apartment. Kim Dokcha gritted his teeth and slammed the door shut.
Hurry up. Yoo Jin-hyuk grunted. The plane isn't going to wait for you.
I just need a minute. Kim Dokcha ground out. He hurried back to the suitcase on the bed. Now he had added incentive to be fast anyway. He hadn't counted on Yoo Jin-hyuk seeing his living space today, and he didn't like it. The place was clean, and it wasn't unusual for single guys his age to rent a studio apartment, he reminded himself. But when Yoo Jin-hyuk had gained his independence, he had jumped straight from a family house to a two-bedroom apartment with Mia. He probably couldn't fathom paying monthly rent. Like most people, he used a Jonsei contract.
Not a lot of books here for someone who reads so much,
Yoo Jin-hyuk said behind him. Thank you, Yoo Jin-hyuk. This kind of running commentary was precisely what Kim Dokcha didn't want to hear. He didn't answer. They would be gone 4 days. If Yoo Jin-hyuk didn't figure out for himself in that time that Kim Dokcha mostly read web novels, Kim Dokcha would have to think him terribly unobservant. He crammed his bathroom kit into the suitcase and zipped it up. Then he tucked his shirt into his pants, grabbed the first pair of socks he found, and sat on the mattress to put them on. Yoo Jin-hyuk stepped further into the room.
Shoes, Yoo Jin-hyuk,
Kim Dokcha said, annoyed. The guy had zero manners. Who entered someone's home without removing their shoes first? Yoo Jin-hyuk had stopped in front of the kitchen table. When Kim Dokcha spotted what had caught his attention, his voice died in his throat.
Yoo Jung-hyuk had found the only books that Kim Dokja had left lying around. They were messily piled there, next to a stack of colorful post-its he had used to mark their pages. They weren't novels. Their plain covers and sober, clinical titles made that clear. A heavy weight dropped in Kim Dokja's gut. He watched as Yoo Jung-hyuk took one and riffled through the pages. He didn't know how much effort Yoo Jung-hyuk had dedicated to figuring out why their soul bond was different from others. For all that Yoo Jung-hyuk nitpicked on his own projections, he seemed to go about his life without lingering on the fact that he was the one missing out on what should have been a common experience. He had to have done at least some research, though. There was no surprise on his face at the name of the syndrome plastered on every book cover. Yoo Jung-hyuk was the one to break the stifling silence.
Can I borrow a few?
Kim Dokja returned to his socks.
I'm done with the one you've got.
Truth be told, he had finished all of them. Yet every now and then, he still found himself rereading pages, like prodding at a wound that wouldn't heal. Maybe Yoo Jung-hyuk could tell he was holding back, considering the sticky notes poked out of every book in the stack. But he just nodded. The volume disappeared in his pocket. He finally turned to Kim Dokja, who had moved on to his tie.
Are you ready?
Kim Dokja tugged the tie into place, shrugged into his suit jacket, and grabbed his luggage. He swept his arm toward the door, though with less gusto than usual.
I wouldn't want to make His Majesty late.
Yoo Jung-hyuk glared, but strode out. On a regular day, there was never any parking space left on Kim Dokja's street. But because Yoo Jung-hyuk's life was clearly a blessed one, he had managed to park his car right in front of the building. Kim Dokja shook his head in wonder. Some people just had the protagonist halo in real life. He stashed his suitcase with Yoo Jung-hyuk's in the trunk, then eagerly claimed the passenger seat. He just about melted into the upholstery. This car was just as comfortable as the last time he had gotten a full duration of it. Yoo Jung-hyuk looked at him skeptically as he made himself right at home, extending his legs and reclining the backrest until he was all but lounging. Yoo Jung-hyuk started the car.
You have the tickets?
He said as he pulled them into early morning traffic.
Don't patronize me, Yoo Jung-hyuk. Who's the manager here? Assistant manager.
Yoo Jung-hyuk corrected.
Well, wasn't he being cute?
If you objected to me coming instead of Uriel Shi, you should have said so earlier.
I don't object. We'll see if you're up to the task.
That made it sound like he was being tested. But Kim Dokja couldn't disagree. It should have been Uriel's responsibility to accompany Team 999 on this trip. But she had insisted that he go instead, saying that it would be a formative experience for him. Kim Dokja just hoped that his learning curve wouldn't happen at the expense of the team. They were only flying to Toronto so the WOS World Championship Committee could organize marketing content of all the teams participating, but it still meant that they would be rubbing elbows with the tournament officials, sponsors, and competitors. A car swerved into their lane. Yoo Jung-hyuk punched the horn with a snarl. Kim Dokja winced at the loud sound.
Do you mind? It's too early for your road rage. This car isn't...
Following the three-second rule, Kim Dokja said at the same time as him.
I know, you're so anal about this. Then why don't you drive?
Yoo Jung-hyuk said, affronted.
You're the manager. Why am I the one driving us?
You really got used to your managers driving you around during your formative years, huh?
A little role reversal will do you good, Yoo Jung-hyuk.
Then, as Yoo Jung-hyuk was opening his mouth to retort, anyway, I don't have a driving license. Nor a car, obviously.
Why not?
Kim Dokja felt a vein pulse at his temple. Why would he waste precious money on one when he lived in a city with robust public transport? Yoo Jung-hyuk had seen his apartment. Did Kim Dokja look like he could afford that kind of frivolous lifestyle? Full gyrations are dangerous when operating heavy equipment, he said sweetly. The dig caused Yoo Jung-hyuk to fall silent. The sun was just crossing the horizon when they walked into Incheon International Airport. Yi Hyun-sung, Yi Ji-hae, and Kim Nam-moon were already waiting at the agreed meeting spot. Kim Nam-moon was schmoozing Yi Ji-hae's parents, much to her disgust. There was a round of greetings as the middle-aged couple recognized Yoo Jung-hyuk and Kim Dokta introduced himself. Eventually, Lee Ji-hae managed to get her parents to leave. They did so with Kim Dokja's card and Lee Hyun-sung's assurance that they would contact them if anything went amiss.
Jeez,
Lee Ji-hae said once they were out of earshot.
They're embarrassing. I can take care of myself. I'm an adult.
She looked very young to Kim Dokja in that instant, as she glared at her feet with her cheeks dusted red. Yet she was right. She was 19 and financially independent at that. But she was a woman. Worse, a woman who had chosen to work in a predominantly male field. Her parents couldn't seem to let go of the notion that she wasn't safe, that she needed to be protected.
Let them talk, Kim Namun said, grinning. They don't know anything anyway.
He tried to throw an arm around her shoulders. Furious, Lee Ji-hae pushed him away.
I don't want to hear that from you. You were practically licking their shoes.
Hey, I wasn't.
As they made their way toward the departure hall, Kim Dokta thoughtfully watched the girl. They were as different as night and day, but for a moment, he was reminded of Yoo Sang-a. He sped up to walk at her side.
Are you thinking about moving out?
Huh? She said, startled.
You can ask Yuryul-si or me for help if you do. We could find you some good places to look at.
Oh, thanks, Ajisi. It was common for people her age to still live with their parents, and hers probably expected that she would stay until she married. But Kim Dokja was the last person who would promote traditional family dynamics.
Actually, Lee Ji-hae said, emboldened, I'm waiting for someone.
What? Kim Namun squeaked. Someone,
said Lee Hyun-sung, who was clearly hearing about this for the first time, too. Even Yoo Jung-hyuk glanced back at her in surprise.
That's right, Lee Ji-hae said proudly. Hyewon Oni's been saving to come up to live in Seoul. So I'm waiting, and then we'll live together.
Kim Namun made several attempts to talk, but words seemed to have deserted him.
Hyewon, is that your soulmate? Kim Dokja said.
Yeah, how did you know?
Lee Ji-hae said.
Yuryul-si mentioned her, I think, he lied. She sounds pretty cool.
Lee Ji-hae's face lit up.
She is! Hyewon Oni is so cool!
She started gushing about the older woman.
Jung Hyewon lived in Daejeon,
but she often made the trip to spend the weekend with Lee Ji-hae. They had been planning to move in together since Lee Ji-hae had signed up with Transcendence Gaming. Lee Ji-hae had an inexhaustible amount of stories to tell about her, and it put her in a much better mood. Kim Namun fumed quietly in the background. It was pretty obvious to Kim Dokja that Lee Ji-hae was in awe with her soulmate, not love, but Kim Namun didn't seem to see the difference. It was also plain from the way he was glaring at Kim Dokja that he was blaming him for having to hear this.
You're listening pretty intently there, Ajashi,
Kim Namun drawled as they were waiting in line to get through security.
Are you in the market for a hot kendo girlfriend?
That shut Lee Ji-hae up immediately. Her hackles rose.
You better not. She's way too good for you. There's no way she'd be interested, and she could break you in half without a sweat.
I'm sure Kim Dokta-si was just curious.
Lee Hyun-sung intervened.
Lee Ji-hae, you're always so happy to talk about Jung Hyewon-si. I like hearing your stories, too.
Lee Ji-hae shot her teammate a grouchy look, but she backed off. Still, she put some distance between her and Kim Dokja. It seemed she had remembered that she didn't like him in the first place. Kim Dokja sighed. The lack of animosity had been nice while it lasted. Kim Namun smiled smugly behind Lee Ji-hae's back, happy to have spread his misery. They crept forward another meter.
I bet your soulmate is as lame as you,
Lee Ji-hae muttered. Kim Dokja laughed, too startled to rein it in. His mirth doubled at the incredulous glare Yoo Jung-hyuk sent Lee Ji-hae without her noticing.
You're right, Kim Dokja said. He's very lame.
You have good taste, Lee Ji-hae. Yoo Jung-hyuk transferred his glower to him. Lee Ji-hae looked at him like he had lost his mind. The plane's business class already felt like a foreign country. This was Kim Dokja's second time traveling abroad for work, but nobody in his previous jobs would have wasted money on a contractor, so he had spent his first flight stuck in a middle seat in economy class. Now he was working with celebrities. The professional gamers naturally got comfortable seats, and since it would be awkward if Kim Dokja was stuck in economy while his four precious charges enjoyed business class without supervision, here he was, discovering a new world of luxury. He promptly snagged a window seat. Yoo Jung-hyuk and Lee Hyun-sung were busy arranging the luggage in the overhead compartments to their satisfaction, and they didn't react when he ducked under their arms. He happily settled in and fiddled with the chair's commands. Kim Namoon and Lee Ji-hae were already squabbling in the row behind him, the boy having snagged the seat that she was trying to save for Yoo Jung-hyuk. The two men in the aisle finished with their task. Lee Hyun-sung smiled at Kim Dokja and took a step as if to sit next to him. Apparently not noticing his intention, Yoo Jung-hyuk slid into the spot before he could reach it. Kim Dokja flinched. Lee Hyun-sung looked startled. He must not have expected that choice from Yoo Jung-hyuk, since he had every reason to think his captain didn't like their manager. Pleased, he beamed at them and pivoted to take the last seat in the middle aisle. Kim Dokja resisted the urge to shove Yoo Jung-hyuk out and call Lee Hyun-sung back. Yoo Jung-hyuk seemed to have taken this seating arrangement for granted, and it was making his skin crawl. Yoo Jung-hyuk frowned at his stare.
What?
Nothing. Kim Dokja turned to the window. They took off. Kim Dokja spent the first hour feasting his eyes on the view of the coastline far below. Still, eventually, he got bored. The flight was a long one. 13 hours separated them from Toronto, and much to his chagrin, the plane didn't offer Wi-Fi. Millions of won per ticket and no Wi-Fi! He put his phone away with a scowl. His eyes wandered toward the aisle. That's when he noticed that Yoo Jung-hyuk had pulled out the book he had borrowed from him. He was well into the first chapter. Kim Dokja watched him straighten the sticky notes, paying particular attention to the pages that Kim Dokja had marked. Kim Dokja whipped back to the window. "Did you warn your fans that you would miss tomorrow's stream, Yoo Jung-hyuk?" he threw out. This succeeded in getting Yoo Jung-hyuk to look up.
"Yes,"
he said, and managed to carry in a single word the notion that he didn't appreciate a newbie trying to tell him how to do his job. Kim Dokja scrambled for a way to keep the conversation going. Unexpectedly, Lee Ji-hae came to his help. "Speaking of the streams," she said, popping her head over their seats. "Master, how much longer do you think Demon King will be gone? It's been weeks already."
Oh, how unexpected for that name to come up. "He didn't say,"
Yoo Jung-hyuk replied, sounding disgruntled. Kim Dokja's lips twitched.
"Shouldn't you name a few more mods anyway?"
Kim Namoon said.
2 isn't a lot for a channel that big, Captain. What if DK doesn't come back?"
"Of course he'll come back," Lee Ji-hae said, affronted.
"How? Why are you hitting me? I'm just saying, the dude has a life."
Kim Dokja scratched his forehead to hide his expression. To think Kim Namoon would be the voice of reason in a room. Yes, 2 mods was a ridiculously small number for a channel of that size. But would Yoo Jung-hyuk consent to listen? Unlikely, considering he had already gone back to his book in an obvious bid to ignore the teenagers. Kim Dokja shook his head. So many years had passed, and still this guy stayed the same. By the time Kim Dokja finished his second year of college, Yoo Jung-hyuk's Starstream channel had properly taken off. So Kim Dokja packed his bags. Military service came with a rigid schedule, which meant he would definitely miss some of the streams. But at that point, the chat was lively and regular donations came to supplement Mia's education fund. Yoo Jung-hyuk would do fine without him. The form Kim Dokja had to fill prior to his departure included a question about his soulmate's nationality. He answered it without fuss. Before his first day in the service was over, he was quietly ushered aside by an officer who explained to him, as close to beaming as one ever got in the army,
that if he would just hand over his soulmate's identity so counterintelligence could investigate them, he could get switched over to a cushier posting and earn a promotion and a permanent position by the end of his service. That was a surprise. Kim Dokja hadn't realized how desperate they were for recruits whose fulgurations didn't pose a security risk. After all, most people were born in a different country than their soulmate. He refused. Needless to say, his hierarchy took an instant dislike to him. At least he was no stranger to gritting his teeth and bearing it. It was fine. As long as he could escape into Yoo Jung-hyuk's life once in a while, he was fine. Unfortunately, catching the streams proved even harder than he expected. Personal phones were forbidden on base, and he was on duty during the Wednesday stream. On Saturdays, the base's computer room was packed with recruits, taking advantage of their day off to catch up on emails or unwind online. It hadn't taken long for Kim Dokja's batchmates to catch on to the way the officers were treating him. The recruits had gotten into the habit of shoving him in the corridors and other such annoyances. Stepping into a closed room with so many of them would have been unwise, so he contented himself with slinking in during the evenings to watch the stream's replays. But he still had the fulgurations. Training sessions on WOS, meetings with sponsors, quiet moments with Mia and Nangun Minyong. They were all welcome distractions to whatever hellish day Kim Dokja was going through. As time passed, though, he started worrying. Whenever a fulguration happened during a stream, Yoo Jung-hyuk felt somber and brooding. Was this sunfish already so bored with streaming? One day, Kim Dokja heard him consider closing the channel. He was startled by the pang of grief in his chest. The streams were his only interactions with Yoo Jung-hyuk, and, selfishly, he had come to look forward to them. Would they really stop before he could even watch one more live? He didn't want that. But it was out of his hands. 18 months went by at a crawl, until finally Kim Dokja stood in an empty studio in Seoul, the sum total of his belongings fitting in 3 cardboard boxes on the floor. Rather than unpack, he flopped down on the bare mattress and took out his phone. His batchmates had been delighted to go back to their girlfriends, and here he was, giddy to be loading the Starstream app. Supreme King appeared on the screen. Yoo Jung-hyuk was silent, WOS's background music and sound effects speaking for him. Kim Dokja basked in that return to normalcy for a long moment. At least he had come back before the channel disappeared. The instant he said his greetings in the chat room, Yoo Jung-hyuk's playing ground to a halt.
"Where were you?"
he growled, glaring at the camera. The chat stayed silent out of confusion.
"Reader."
Crown emoji. A reader.
Wait, me?
Where were you?
A reader.
Doing my military service?
Yoo Jung-hyuk, as an esports celebrity, was allowed to delay his own service. Kim Dokja knew he would take advantage of it as long as he could, if only so he did not have to leave Mia when she was still so young. Yoo Jung-hyuk scowled.
You couldn't have given notice?
A reader.
Notice? What is this, the office?
Crown emoji breaking the sky.
Am I finally relieved of Ma Diddy? About time.
Teacher,
Yoo Jung-hyuk said, sounding almost chagrined. Kim Dokja goggled at his screen. This was Namgun Minyong? Namgun Minyong was in the chat. Namgun Minyong had a Starstream account.
Breaking the sky.
I have better things to do with my time than babysitting your fans, brat.
Breaking the sky.
Hey you, reader idiot.
A reader.
Yes, ma'am.
Breaking the sky.
Good, you understand quickly. You're really back.
0x0, Swamp Predator 0x0.
Breaking the sky is a woman.
A reader.
Yes, ma'am.
Breaking the sky.
Then don't skip out from now on.
Persephone.
Excuse me, I'm rather confused.
Persephone.
I hadn't realized the channel had 2 mods.
Breaking the sky.
No, it only has 1.
Breaking the sky disappeared from the list of watching users. Yoo Jung-hyuk returned to his game without further comment. Yoo Jung-hyuk couldn't seriously have asked Namgun Minyoung to hop online to replace a reader, right? What the hell? The idiot could have just given moderation rights to any half-decent stranger. Kim Dokja bit his lip.
Persephone.
So, new or, I suppose, old mod, who are you?
He failed to swallow back his smile.
A reader.
Hi, nice to meet you. I'm Reader, Yoo Jung-hyuk's companion through life and death.
It was mid-morning in Toronto when they landed. Kim Dokja felt haggard. Despite multiple attempts to distract Yoo Jung-hyuk, the jerk had made significant progress on his reading. Hours in, he had finally put the book aside and leaned his seat back, eyes closed and earphones plugged in. By then, Kim Dokja had been too high-strung to do the same.
Ugh, too bright,
Lee Ji-hae complained when they disembarked, one hand shielding her bleary eyes.
I told you to rest on the plane,
Yoo Jung-hyuk said without mercy.
It was too hard to sleep, Master. Kim Namun kept bugging me,
she added with a glare at her grinning seatmate. You'll have time for a bit of a nap once we're settled, Kim Dokja said. That's all, though. We're expected at Minosoft HQ for lunch.
Lunch,
Lee Ji-hae said with disgust. At this point, they had been awake for 18 hours. Jet lag was going to be hard to contend with. You wouldn't believe it watching Yoo Jung-hyuk power through the airport, though.
Hurry up, he told his companions, as they dragged their tired bodies towards customs.
Lee Hyun-sung and Lee Ji-hae made a valiant effort to speed up. Kim Dokja slowed down. Kim Namun shot him a delighted smile and aligned his pace with his.
Kim Dokja.
Yoo Jung-hyuk growled, glaring daggers at him.
I saw it too, Yoo Jung-hyuk,
Kim Dokja said. But all that his soothing tone achieved was to make Yoo Jung-hyuk stiffen up like an injured animal ready to bite.
Then hurry up.
They're going to be faster than us anyway. Better let them pass.
She's going to wait,
Yoo Jung-hyuk predicted between gritted teeth, and he whirled around.
Then make her wait, Kim Dokja called after him.
But Yoo Jung-hyuk was already striding away. Ugh, that guy really had no notion of psychological warfare.
Who's they, Ajisi?
Kim Namun said. Kim Dokja just hurried him along before they lost their esteemed leader's black and green jacket in the crowds. They passed through customs and baggage claim and into the public areas of the airport. Yoo Jung-hyuk didn't stop. Kim Dokja rolled his eyes and came to a halt, letting his four ducklings charge their way through the hall without him. He had a detour to make first. By the time he caught up to them, the team had reached the airport exit. They stood on the curb, frozen in a tense standoff with a group of people wearing gray and pink sports jackets. Yoo Jung-hyuk's hand was white-knuckled around his luggage.
See?
Kim Dokja muttered as he stepped up next to Lee Hyun-sung.
Didn't I say we should have taken our time? You knew about this, Dokja Si.
Lee Hyun-sung whispered worriedly. The arrival screen showed a Los Angeles flight touching down just before ours. Zarathustra's players looked between Yoo Jung-hyuk and the pretty blonde woman among them. She smiled.
Good morning, Jung-hyuk, she said in English.
It's been a while. How have you been? Though her expression was inviting, her eyes on Yoo Jung-hyuk were cold. They warmed up significantly when she turned to Lee Ji-hae, Kim Namun, and Lee Hyun-sung.
Pleased to meet you. I am Anna Croft,
she told them in Korean.
I hope we'll get to know each other.
The three gamers shifted in unease.
What do you want?
Yoo Jung-hyuk ground out.
Jung-hyuk, good morning.
Another person intervened, in English again. It was Selena Kim, Zarathustra's manager. She smiled at her ex-colleague like she couldn't feel the awkwardness of the situation.
We saw you were landing at roughly the same time as us, so we figured we could all share the cars Minosoft sent to take us to the hotel, she said. It's more convivial this way, right? We can catch up and you can introduce us to your new teammates.
Yoo Jung-hyuk glared at her in disbelief. His eyes swept over the rest of Zarathustra. Two of his ex-teammates ducked their heads, unable to meet his gaze. Anna Croft always did this. There were three women in her team, and their manager was also a woman. It often caused their opponents to underestimate them. Anna Croft had learned to weaponize that. Zarathustra made it a point to appear charming and non-threatening in meetings with other gamers. Sometimes they could gain valuable information about their rivals' tactics this way. But even just encouraging arrogant men to let their guard down before an impromptu game was a point in their favor. It was no wonder that she had wanted to get rid of Yoo Jin-hyuk. Not only was he incapable of making her charade work with an appearance like his, the act's mere existence offended him. And now she dared to turn it on his new team? She had guts.
No,
Yoo Jin-hyuk said, an absolute rejection. Selena Kim's face fell. Kim Dok-ja had never been able to tell if she was in on Anna's schemes or if Anna was taking advantage of her natural friendliness.
Really, Jung-hyuk?
Anna said, sounding like a disappointed mother.
We can be civil, can we not?
The look that Yoo Jin-hyuk fixed on her was terrible. To her credit, she didn't flinch. She addressed his three teammates, switching to Korean, once more in a bid to endear herself to them.
We'll be working together for the next few days. It would really be our pleasure to get to know you. We can fill each car with two people from each team.
I said no,
Yoo Jin-hyuk snapped.
Captain, if you want, I can go,
Lee Hyun-sung said. Turning himself into a shield to keep the peace, that was his style. Meanwhile, Lee Ji-hae was frowning, but her loyalty to Yoo Jin-hyuk kept her from speaking up. Kim Nam-un didn't seem to care one way or the other. Anna wasn't making much headway with them. She probably realized that since she turned to Yoo Jin-hyuk to braid him again.
We were colleagues for so long. We'll see each other a lot this week. Can't you let bygones be bygones?
She kept using Korean to bootlick and English to taunt. How flexible. How about switching it up once in a while? You certainly don't let success get to your head, lecturing a grown man about the grudges he should or shouldn't be holding against you. How gracious. Only Selena Kim and Anna Croft understood Korean in Zarathustra. They both looked at Kim Dok-ja in surprise.
Who are you?
Anna Croft said. He gave her his fakest smile. Thank you for your offer, but it won't be necessary. We're not staying at the hotel Minosoft provided, and I already reserved a taxi. He pointed at the middle-aged man who had followed him from the arrivals hall. The bemused driver had been standing there watching them talk all this time, a placard reading, Transcendence Gaming, still in his hands. So if you're done taking up our poor driver's time, we'll be on our way. Kim Dok-ja nodded at the man. Sorry for the wait. We can go now, he told him in heavily accented English. Ah, this way, this way. Lee Hyun-sung eagerly followed their driver, Lee Ji-hae and Kim Nam-un in his wake. Maybe Yoo Jin-hyuk was taken aback by the sudden lack of conflict. He didn't move until Kim Dok-ja laid a hand on his back and pushed. Look at you getting tunnel vision on me, Kim Dok-ja whispered to him. Am I not your manager? Shouldn't you be the one following me? Where were you even going, huh? The muscles under his hand slowly unwound.
We're not going to the same place, Yoo Jin-hyuk said.
Do I look stupid? Why would he want to give Anna the opportunity to cross paths with friendly Lee Hyun-sung in a hotel lounge or restaurant? Why would he want Lee Ji-hae and Kim Nam-un to spend more time than necessary with the two girls their age in Zarathustra?
Jin-hyuk.
Yoo Jin-hyuk ignored the voice and kept walking. Kim Dok-ja glanced over his shoulder. Anna Croft seemed to have accepted her defeat. The antagonism had disappeared from her eyes. I just wanted you to know, she called after Yoo Jin-hyuk. I heard about the divorce. I was sorry to hear it. Yoo Jin-hyuk froze mid-step. At one glimpse of his face, Kim Dok-ja dropped his suitcase.
Lee Hyun-sung,
he shouted. He threw himself at Yoo Jin-hyuk's waist, just as Yoo Jin-hyuk rolled around.
Anna Croft?
He shouted with an animalistic snarl. Anna Croft flinched. The open surprise on her face saved her life. If Kim Dokja thought she had done this on purpose, he would have let Yoo Jung-hyuk wrench her head off. Lee Hyun-sung's arms closed around Yoo Jung-hyuk's shoulders and strained to hold him back.
"Be patient, Yoo Jung-hyuk," Kim Dokja said. "Destroy her in-game. In-game."
Although startled, Zarathustra hurriedly closed ranks around Anna Croft. Selena Kim was smart enough to take Anna's elbow and pull her away.
"Captain, please,"
Lee Hyun-sung said. Yoo Jung-hyuk's bloodthirsty eyes followed his enemy until she disappeared in the crowds. He stopped fighting against their hold. His frantic breaths hissed through gritted teeth. His hand closed like a vice around Kim Dokja's arm. Kim Dokja let him go with a wince. Lee Hyun-sung jumped away. Yoo Jung-hyuk whirled around and strode ahead without a word.
"Are you all right, Dr. C?"
Lee Hyun-sung said. "I'll live," he said, and bent to retrieve his luggage.
"This is not a hotel,"
Kim Nam-moon said.
"Very astute of you to notice," Kim Dokja replied.
It was a relief to be out of the taxi. Yoo Jung-hyuk's dark mood had seemed to take all the space in the car with them, killing any conversation before it could start. They entered the apartment building. Kim Dokja led them up a few floors and down a short corridor. He found the correct door and squinted at the key lockbox on the wall. He had never had the money to travel during his time off, so this was his first time using one of those short-term rental services.
"Why is it not a hotel?"
Kim Nam-moon said again.
"I wanted to try ordering room service at 2 a.m.
"Exactly because of that," Kim Dokja smiled at him beatifically.
"Mean, Ajisi."
As he entered his code on the keypad, Kim Dokja added, "I rented an apartment because I figured it would be nicer if you guys could spend time in a common space at the end of the day, instead of everyone disappearing in their hotel room. Plus, hotels are a hassle for Yoo Jung-hyuk. This picky guy can't cook there, so he barely eats anything." Lee Hyun-sung, Kim Nam-moon, and Lee Ji-hae looked at Yoo Jung-hyuk. Yoo Jung-hyuk stopped glaring at the wall to stare at Kim Dokja. Kim Dokja opened the door. Lee Ji-hae and Kim Nam-moon immediately set off to explore.
"All right," Kim Dokja said, dropping his suitcase in the living room and stretching his arms.
"There are two rooms with a queen bed and one room with twin beds. Lee Ji-hae gets one of the queens. The rest of you share however you want."
"Do we have to?"
Kim Nam-moon complained. Lee Ji-hae made a happy noise and promptly claimed the room with the ensuite bathroom.
"What about you, Dokja Si?"
Lee Hyun-sung asked. Kim Dokja sat heavily on the couch. He patted the cushion.
"I'll be out here. The sofa is a pullout."
"All right, well..."
Lee Hyun-sung sent an interrogative glance at Yoo Jung-hyuk, but Yoo Jung-hyuk was still looking at Kim Dokja and didn't react. Lee Hyun-sung fidgeted. Then he collared Kim Nam-moon before the teenager could sneakily claim the other queen bedroom for himself.
"Let's share, Kim Nam-moon."
Kim Nam-moon whined, but let himself be herded into the other room.
"I'm waking you all in an hour, so get some sleep while you can," Kim Dokja called.
"Yes, Mom,"
Kim Nam-moon shouted back. Doors closed. There were sounds of curtains being drawn and clothes rustling. Kim Dokja looked at the man standing by the balcony door.
"Aren't you going to get some rest, Yoo Jung-hyuk?"
Yoo Jung-hyuk didn't answer. His eyes were now on the buildings outside. Kim Dokja dropped his neck against the backrest. An entire minute passed before Yoo Jung-hyuk said,
"You know about last year."
Kim Dokja contemplated the ceiling. He licked his lips.
"A lot of things happened last year," he said.
Yoo Jung-hyuk turned toward him. Kim Dokja met his eyes. He seemed calmer, at least. When it became obvious that Yoo Jung-hyuk wouldn't say anything more, Kim Dokja repeated, "You should go rest." After a moment of deliberation, Yoo Jung-hyuk crossed the room. Kim Dokja returned to his scrutiny of the ceiling. When Yoo Jung-hyuk passed behind the couch, Kim Dokja thought he felt something skim through his hair. He looked up, but the door was already closing behind Yoo Jung-hyuk. His heart gave a confused beat. Footnote. In Korea, there are two ways to rent this place. A wholesale lease, which is what most of us know. You pay rent every month. Most studios use a wholesale lease. A junsei lease. You make a huge lump sum deposit at the start, then only pay utilities every month. When you move out, the landlord gives you back the full deposit. Landlords make a profit from investing the deposits. Junsei leases were more common than wholesale for a long time, and it's only in recent years that the trend has started reversing. Kim Dokjo would need a bank loan to afford a junsei lease, so he's feeling the class divide here.